fucking handicap, or my pussy is not garbage. I didn't know what to say or do. I just sat there in shock until my break was over. Then I went back to my computer. When I got back to the ticket counter, he didn't even want to throw my bags no more. He went down to the other end of the counter and threw somebody else's bags. And he gave me the evil eye the rest of the day. Then I didn't see him after that for a few days. I went to his boss at work. They said, "We don't know where Roscoe is. Roscoe just stopped coming to work." After a few weeks, I thought to myself, damn, maybe I shouldn't have broke up with him. Maybe that was my blessing from God. If he was my blessing and I shitted on my blessing, that's not cool. I need to find him and talk to him. I went back to the address where I picked him up for our date. The same girl with Down syndrome answered the door. She said Roscoe was gone. Roscoe left. Roscoe not here no more. But you still so beautiful. You still so beautiful. Nobody at his group home knew where he went. I even talked to the lady that ran the place. She said she didn't know where he moved to or where he went. He left without even telling them where he was going. I didn't know where else to look for him or what else to do. He was gone. He just vanished. Nobody knew what happened to Roscoe. I didn't tell anyone about Roscoe and me. I just kept it to myself. I still have all these what-ifs go through my mind. I seriously think to myself, what if he was an angel from heaven? What if God was testing me to see if I can have compassion and overlook people's physical handicaps and look at the beauty of their souls? Roscoe was such a beautiful person. He had a truly beautiful soul. He was always so positive and supportive. Whatever I said I wanted to do, everyone else put me down or told me I couldn't do it. Not Roscoe. He would always encourage me. He was one of the first people I told when I decided to start doing comedy. I'm about to go full-time in comedy, Roscoe.
Timony, you'll do so good. You're so funny. Tell me when you're doing it. I'ma come to see you.
I'm doing open mics right now. Maybe when my shows get bigger, then you can come to the show.
Oh, you're so funny. You make everybody laugh. You're gonna be the best comedian. You're gonna be the best.
He was always so encouraging. Even though life dealt him a bad hand, he was always just a positive motherfucker. And then he was gone. And it was my fault. For years, I didn't tell none of my friends about him. And then I ran into one of my old co-workers, and I told her. She about choked. You fucked Roscoe? Oh, my God. How did you end up fucking Roscoe? I remember he used to talk about you every day. If you didn't show up to work, he'd be wondering where you were, so worried about you. How did you end up fucking Roscoe? I told her what happened. The whole story. Then she got all mad at me. You never told no one that? If you don't talk about that on stage, you wrong. You have to go talk about that. Because handicapped people need love. They need love too. They people. And I told her straight up. I was like, yeah, I know. I know I'm going to heaven too. Roscoe taught me that. What do you mean you know you going to heaven? Because I fucked Roscoe. Roscoe's probably an angel, a fallen angel. I feel like Roscoe was like that John Travolta character in that movie Michael. He came to earth to teach me to be humble and that all people need love no matter who or what they are. Because I fucked him, that's why he disappeared. That's why we don't see him no more. Because he went back to heaven. Only a heavenly dick could fuck me the way Roscoe did. She kind of paused. And then we both broke out laughing. She told me, well, I don't know about all that, but still, you got to talk about this. You got to tell the world about your handicapped angel. In my heart, I knew she was right. I couldn't keep it all to myself. P.S. I wonder if Roscoe ever sees me on TV or in any of those movies. You know, I imagine that he's like sitting in some group home somewhere maybe, sees me on TV, sitting there with his friends, and like, I know her, I fucked her, her pussy garbage. And they're like, Shut up, Roscoe. You don't know her. You ain't never fucked her.
No, I'm telling you, I fucked her, and her pussy is garbage, okay? I promise you guys, she's horrible.
If you have seen me, Roscoe, and if anybody been sitting with Roscoe, and he told you that he fucked me, he did. And please send him back to me. I promise you, Roscoe, my pussy is not garbage no more. I know you just said that because your feelings was hurt. I love you and I miss you. How I got restarted in comedy. I quit comedy when I was 18 so I could get a job and provide for myself. I got restarted in comedy at 22 because I had to stump a bitch out for disrespecting me. It was Bertha. Yes, that same Bertha. The stripper that Titus, the boyfriend, couldn't pimp, and I could. Here's how it went down. When I was still pimping her, Bertha asked me if I could pick her up from the strip club one day. She had me take her to a party. When we arrived, Titus, the boyfriend, was there. I don't know if I should stay for this. Titus was like,
nah, it's cool, Tiff. It's cool. I ain't tripping. I get it. Let bygones be bygones. Me and Bertha, we in a relationship now.
Okay, cool. I pulled Bertha aside and told her, I will always be cool with you. Just don't ever disrespect me. If you ever disrespect me, it's gonna be a motherfucking problem. That night was fine. I was drinking 211 beer. Now, I don't know if you ever heard of this beer, but it's 99 cents. This is the shit that bums buy to get all fucked up on the cheap. It makes you fucking crazy. Of course, Titus, the Pope Pimp, has this at his party. I drank some and fell asleep on the couch. When I woke up, it was late. Titus and Bertha were on the floor right next to the couch I was sleeping on. Fucking. Like right next to me. I jumped up. Bitch, what'd I tell you about disrespecting me? I just started stomping on her. I was straight ghetto stomping her out. She curled up into a ball and started crying. Get your motherfucking ass up, bitch. I'm fixing to beat your ass some more, hoe.
Stop. I'm not going to fight you. Tiffany, I'm not going to fight you. I'm going to call the police.
Call the motherfucking police. I'll just get your ass deported up out this bitch. You fixing to get deported right back to Jamaica, bitch. I know you here illegally. I'm the one fucking pimping you. What's up now? Titus tried to stop me from stomping on her. I did what any black woman who's being disrespected would do. I straight punched him in the mouth. Don't you fucking touch me, nigga. I will kill you.
Why are you tripping?
I just started going berserk. I was drunk as hell on 211, screaming at the top of my lungs. Bertha was crying. Titus was screaming. I was throwing furniture. It was for real black woman craziness. Then his homeboy picked me up from behind and carried me out of the house to my car. Needless to say, I stopped talking to Bertha after that. I had no more words for her. That's how I stopped pimping her. Maybe 2 months later, Titus showed up to my house with the ring, asking would I marry him. He had put rose petals all over my car in the shape of a heart and a bunch more all over my yard. Are you fucking serious right now?
Tiffany, you the smartest woman I know. Please, will you marry me?
Oh, yeah. The ring still had the price tag on it from Kmart. It was $38. A $38 ring? That's what he thought I was worth? Get the fuck out of here with that cheap-ass ring. Fuck you. Don't ever talk to me again. I was so pissed. I cussed him out. I was angry all night. The next day, I was so disturbed emotionally, I started crying. I cried all day, all night. I could not stop crying at work. Then I started to bleed. At first, I thought it was just my period, but it wouldn't stop. It was heavy. I was feeling weak. This went on for weeks. I was bleeding so much, I eventually went through every maxi pad in all of LAX. I seriously think I used every one of them huge free maxis in all the women's bathrooms in the whole damn airport. Eventually, it just ran down my leg. It was just like I had peed on myself, but it was blood pouring out of me. My manager at the airlines was a nice, white, nerdy guy. "Tiffany, that's blood. You're bleeding. You're standing in a puddle of blood. You have to go. We're calling 911. Are you pregnant or something?" "No, I'm not pregnant or anything. I can't stop bleeding. I don't know why I'm bleeding." It was so embarrassing. All I could think about was that I didn't have insurance and I couldn't pay for an ambulance. "I don't want to pay for an ambulance. Just call my grandma." My grandma came and took me to the hospital. They couldn't figure out what was wrong. There was nothing in my test. They kept me in the hospital overnight. Nothing showed up that was actually wrong. No fibroids, nothing. They couldn't figure it out. They gave me some medication, like some birth control stuff that's supposed to make it stop. My stomach also felt like it was on fire, like it was burning up. They said I didn't have ulcers or nothing like that, but they gave me something for it. I got so skinny. I was like down to 110 pounds. I felt like I was dying. I was crying all the time, bleeding all the time. My stomach was hurting all the time. I was so fucking sick. They eventually gave me some antidepressants. They recommended that I see a psychiatrist, so I did. The therapist was nice. She talked to me about my life and everything, and I was constantly crying in there. But it was weird because everything I said, she would laugh. She would be giggling and stuff. "Why are you laughing? That shit's not funny. My life fucking sucks." She'd stop and compose herself, but pretty soon she'd be laughing again. "Tiffany, what do you love to do? What makes you happy?" my therapist said. And I was like, "I like teeth. Maybe I should just be a dentist because I really love teeth. I really like the way teeth look, but I don't want to hurt anybody. So maybe I could just be a dental assistant." She laughed at that too. "Have you ever thought about comedy? It's funny you say that. I like seeing people smile, hearing laughter. That makes me happy. You know, I used to do comedy in high school. Remember when I went to Laugh Factory Comedy Camp and how great that was? And remember how I stopped doing comedy when I had got kicked out of my grandma's house at 18? I stopped doing comedy because it wasn't paying anything, right?" I told her all about that, about how great it was for me and why I quit. "Well, maybe you should start doing that again, at least as a hobby. Do stand-up comedy again. It made you so happy then, why not now?" Well, fuck. I forgot about that. I forgot about how much I love comedy. I forgot how much joy it brought me. I decided to try it, do some open mics. Basically, open mic is some shit that anyone can get up and do. I thought about it, and I prepared. And I got ready. I got up and did 5 minutes. And I got a ton of laughs. It was amazing. I went back the next night and did the same 5-minute set, but with some improvements. It was even better. People loved it. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not like I was bringing the house down and people were in tears at my brilliance, throwing roses on the stage and screaming my name. That shit didn't happen for at least 10 more years. But open mics are tough. Most of the people suck and aren't funny, and the crowd can get annoyed and become hostile. To get any laughs at an open mic is really good, and I got laughs. People liked me. They enjoyed it. It was like the smallest thing, but it was so profound for me. I had known this at 15, that this was my calling, and I had quit. And now here I was, telling my stories and hearing people laugh at them and feeling that rush again. I started doing lots of open mics, getting my comedy chops back again. And the more time that I spent on comedy, the more the bleeding stopped. The stomach pain stopped. The crying and depression stopped. I don't know how or why, but all that bad shit stopped. All of it. Just from doing open mics. Now, I'm not saying open mics can heal you, but it worked for me. I started to become more happy and more joyous. I started thinking more positive. I started reading positive books. Then Titus tried to get back with me. He started coming to my open mics, and he would write jokes and put them in my mailbox or whatever. They were terrible jokes, fucking knock-knock shit. I was done with him, though. I had already fucked Roscoe by this point, and I had refound comedy. I didn't have no time in my life for no fake-ass pimp who thought I was worth $38. I kept doing open mics and kept feeling better. And then I got my first paid gig. It almost derailed me and sent me off comedy forever. One of my aunties called me and said her friend was having some women's group meeting or something, and they wanted me to perform at their event. My auntie was like, and it pays $50. I was like, yeah, right. How much time do they want me to do? 2 hours? Mm-mm, girl. They want you to do 15 minutes. That's it. Oh, hell yes. I'm up in there. I got there, and I knew it was a woman's event ahead of time. But damn, there were no men there. I had come with another comedian friend, a guy. He was like, Tiffany, a lot of these ladies sure is leaning in close to each other. And I was like, oh, they probably can't hear each other over the music. I came out onto the stage, all excited and ready to give my 15-minute set. I've been preparing and refining at open mics. My jokes were all about dating and having a man. And this woman yelled out, I bet you I could fuck you better than your man. I was like, what did she say? I just stood there confused for a second because I just did not believe she could have said that. Then I kept going with another joke about a man. Then some other woman yelled out, we don't want to hear about no men. Damn, baby, your body look good. You fine. Let's talk about that. I've been interrupted twice now. I was too confused to keep going. So I blurted out, kind of kidding, what is this, a lesbian event or some shit? Everybody in unison was like, yeah. Oh, shit. Nobody told me this shit. That got a big laugh. I was so uncomfortable. I didn't know what to do, so I just did what I always do when I'm uncomfortable. I made shit way worse. I started talking about dick even more, and then I kept talking about dick. I was going on about all the dicks, and then some woman blurted out, I got a drawer full of dicks for you, and you can pick any one you want, baby. That got the best laugh yet from the crowd. I was like, okay, no. I was talking about one that is actually attached to a man. I love men. Let me tell you about men and they dicks. I just went into this whole thing about how awesome men are and how much I love men, which was pretty ironic considering the best man I had ever been with in my life lived in a group home for the handicapped. If I had been a more experienced comedian, I would have talked about that and made a ton of jokes about that, and the crowd would have loved it. But I wasn't there yet. I was just being antagonizing and awkward. We don't want no dick lovers here. I just started laughing at that, mainly because nobody else was laughing, and I was that uncomfortable. They were only laughing when somebody was heckling me, and I was so nervous. Get your funky ass off the stage, dick lover. I was like, oh, hell no. See, you can heckle me if you want to, but don't be trying to get me off the stage. I'm going to stay up here my whole time, and I'm going to get all my money. I did that. I stayed on the full 15 minutes. When I got off the stage, I felt like a piece of meat. If you think only men can make a woman feel horrible, you don't know shit about other women. I felt the worst I have felt in a long time. And the dude I was with, he was no help.
Yeah, I don't know about this. If you get reactions like this all the time, I don't think you should do comedy.
I was pretty depressed. I was reconsidering whether this was for me. Then the promoter handed me $50. I just tanked on stage. The worst I had ever tanked in my comedy life. And I got $50. This was great. I knew right then, in the middle of all these lesbians offering me their dildos, that I was going to do this for the rest of my life. I thought about that moment a lot and why I felt like that. How could such a painful, embarrassing moment become the turning point in my life? When I think about it, I had already made the decision to be a comedian earlier in my life. When I rode that bus all damn day, 2 days in a row, just to stand in a courtroom as a 15-year-old foster kid that nobody loved, I told the judge that I was going to be a successful comedian. That was the day I decided in my heart to be a comedian and make people laugh. But what happened on that lesbian bomb night was that when I did that show and those women heckled me and they were laughing at each other's heckles, people were still laughing. Yeah, they were laughing at my expense, but people laughed and I got paid. I got $50 for 15 minutes. If I could string together like even just 4 15-minute segments per day, I could be making bank. But it wasn't just about making money. When I'm on stage, I feel like it's where I'm supposed to be. It's who I am. When I'm on stage, it's like this adrenaline rush. You got to show up and be on and bust your ass or people will not laugh. And nothing else makes my mind work so fast and so hard. I like that feeling. Getting paid that night allowed me to imagine a place for myself in the universe doing something I loved. It's a risk, though. Everything you get on that stage is earned, not given. You don't know anybody in the room, and you don't know what these people are going to laugh at, if they're going to like it or not. It's very scary. But the weird flip side of this is that I know I'm safe up there. I know they can say whatever they want to, but nobody's going to hurt me up there. If somebody does hurt me, it's going to be a room full of witnesses. I just feel the safest there. And even if I bomb and they say terrible things about me, people will laugh at me and I'll get paid anyway. In the worst case, I get paid to make people laugh. And the power that comes with it is intoxicating. It's better than any drug. As soon as I step my foot out on that stage, all these eyes are on me. I feel like I'm the bravest, safest person in the room. Everybody's anticipating what I have to say. And I have this power that I don't have anywhere else, okay? Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But it feels so fucking good. And then, when I come off the stage, I've got this high. And even when I do bad, I get that high. And then, the high starts to come down, but once they hand me my money, then I'm back high again. Whether it was a good experience or a bad experience, I was compensated for it. That's validation. I felt all this in a flash. At the moment the guy gave me $50 for doing 15 minutes of terrible comedy, I knew at the core of my being that my job was going to be to get on stage and make people laugh and get paid for it. She ready. Dating has been hard for me my whole life, and almost none of the relationships I've had worked out that well. I guess that's obvious since I'm still single as of the writing of this book and as of me reading it to you right now. I'm single. Single as hell. No time for love time. How comedy fucks with relationships. I talk about Roscoe on stage sometimes. That shit does not go over well with some guys. My last boyfriend heard about Roscoe during a set of mine. He was like, how long did it take you to write that joke? No time at all. I lived that joke. You lying. That can't be true. Oh, no. Roscoe is real. That whole story is true.
For real? You for real fucked a handicapped dude? I know you got a big heart and everything, but goddamn, Tiffany.
So what? It happened years ago.
You said it was the best sex you ever had. Now I gotta compete with the handicapped dude? What I gotta do to be better than him?
It's not about that. It was the passion, the intensity and all of it.
What exactly do you want? Do you want me to make my hand like a little dinosaur hand to smack you with my fingertips? Is that what you want? Make funny noises when we fuck? You want me to drool?
No. It was Roscoe. It was different. You're different. You don't have to be angry. You're better than Roscoe in other ways. That was the wrong thing to say. He went crazy over that shit. Angry, yelling about how much better he was than some handicapped dude who lived in a group home. Shit, I would hope so. If you gotta point that out, you already in trouble. Later on, we went to a store together, and there was a dude working. You could tell he was touched. He was smiling all big, got wide-eyed, and came up to us all fast. Y'all need help? I'll help you. I'll help you. He was really nice trying to be helpful, but my ex comes barging between us.
You better stand back, Tiffany. Thank you, sir. We good. You can go away now.
Okay, cool. If you need help, you ask me. That guy was so nice, and my ex was kind of mean to him.
I know you want to fuck that motherfucker, don't you, Tiffany? I could tell by the way you smiling at him. Stop smiling, goddammit. I can't leave you nowhere. You want to fuck this handicapped dude. I know you would.
I might. I was kidding, obviously, but he got all angry again.
So you like that in a guy? If Tyson Beckford and a motherfucker missing an arm came in, who were you gonna fuck? The motherfucker missing an arm, ain't you?
Stop tripping.
I didn't fuck no handicap. I gotta watch you. I gotta be on the lookout for dudes with shit wrong creeping on my girl.
A few weeks later, he was going through some old messages of mine on Instagram, still on this handicap thing.
Look at this dude saying he love you and he want to marry you. He look a little touched. Look at his eye. Oh, shit, you probably like him. I'ma block this motherfucker off your page.
Why are you even in my shit like that? We've only been dating 5 months. It's not that serious. It's really not that serious.
I don't know, man. What if we get married, Tiffany? You gonna cheat on me with somebody with a disability?
I wouldn't cheat on you with nobody. If I wanted to cheat, I would just leave you.
You leave me for a dude with a disability?
No. Roscoe's the only handicapped dude I've ever been with. He's the only one. I don't have a variety of handicapped dudes.
You're right, Tiff. You're right.
He did not believe me. He eventually got way back into my social media and found a dude that I did used to mess with who got shot.
Look at this motherfucker. You told him you love him, and he in a wheelchair.
Well, yeah. That was 3 years ago. I did love him when we were dating.
This motherfucker in a wheelchair. I knew you liked handicapped.
When I was in love with him, when I was with him, he was not in a wheelchair. He got shot in the back, okay? That's why he's in a wheelchair.
I bet you were fucking in that wheelchair.
Stop tripping.
I bet you would.
Anytime we had an argument, he would always bring up Roscoe or some kind of handicapped dick. Well, we're not dating anymore. I guess that was easy to predict. Other guys I've dated. I dated a few policemen, and that was generally cool. Cops tend to be pretty good dudes. They're strong and polite, and they treat you right. Well, not all of them. One of the guys, he ended up going to jail for robbing some Mexican fruit stand. He was a crooked cop. I didn't know about him robbing the fruit stands, obviously, but I had a feeling something was off with him. When he would come to my house, he would always put his gun on my dresser. It made me uncomfortable. It was like he was subconsciously saying,
"Don't try nothing, bitch, or I'ma shoot you."
That's what I felt. I didn't like that, so I backed off of him. Good thing, too. I don't want to date some guy who robs poor Mexicans just trying to make some money selling fruit. That ain't right. I've dated 2 dope dealers, but there's nothing really funny about that. They're in jail, too. Come to think of it, I've dated 5 guys who ended up in jail in some form. One was this African dude who would always bring me clothes. Well, I didn't really date him. It felt like I dated him because he would call me so much. And he would bring me clothes and shoes that didn't fit. He put them in front of my house, like right at the front door, like some sort of broke-ass Santa Claus. I never went anywhere with him because who leaves gifts at your door? And they were bad gifts, like real small clothes, double zero clothes, or a pantsuit. And it's a double zero too? I don't wear a double zero. I'm not even close to that size. He bought me some Dada shoes, but they were a size 6. I wear a 10. I was like, ugh. I didn't like that. I threw the clothes and the shoes away, and then he stopped bringing me things because he went to jail. He was running some of those Nigerian Prince email scams, using people's credit cards and checks for identity theft, hitting up old people for their money, that kind of stuff. Raggedy motherfucker. The nice guy. I dated a lawyer once. He was much older than me, like 60. And he was so nice. He was always kind, always polite, and bought me nice things. He took me nice places, taught me a lot, was easy to talk to, a good communicator, and we had a lot of fun. Wherever we'd go, we'd have a good time. We could go to a baby shower and still have fun. And we went to that kind of stuff all the time. He was dope. But that's not why I dated him. To be honest, I dated him for racist reasons. I dated him because he was white. At least I thought he was. I didn't ask him. I just assumed. I found out the truth when he went in for surgery on a torn rotator cuff. I went with him to the hospital to help him afterwards because I'm a good girlfriend. When he was asleep, I wanted to see if we was healthy. You know, because we had been hooking up without a condom for a while. So, I went through his charts, and right there, plain as day, on the blood test, it said he's African American. I went up to the nurse all confused. I was like, he's not African American. Why y'all got this on here? Because he came with me? And the nurse was like, no, that's his chart. That's what his blood work says. I got so sad because I really thought I was dating a white man. When he woke up, I gently broached the subject. You black?
I don't normally talk about it.
He didn't know his mom. He was raised by his white English father in London. When he asked his dad about his mom, his dad said, your mom was mixed, but she was a harlot. Some English people call a hoe a harlot, I guess. So his dad was calling his mom a hoe. You know the sad thing? If he'd been white, I might have kept dating him. Well, maybe. There were other problems. He was also old. He kept asking me to have babies with him. That didn't make sense. Here he was, sitting around with a messed up shoulder, already 60, and he wants me to have a baby? First off, he can't hold a baby with that shoulder. Second, I'm not about to have to change your diaper and a baby's diaper. That's too much work. Third, he already had 2 grown kids. What if they have babies? Now I'm getting grandpa dick? I don't want grandpa dick. I'm cool with baby daddy dick. But Grandpa Dick is no good. That's how I felt anyway. But he was the best boyfriend I ever had. If he was like 20 years younger, it would have been cool. Toxic shock. This isn't really a boyfriend story, but it kind of fits in this chapter because I wanted this doctor to be my boyfriend. Here's how it went down. When I was 13, right before my mom hit the baby with the 2x4 and I got put in foster care, I got toxic shock syndrome. I got toxic shock because I used a super absorbent tampon and I probably should have been using a junior size tampon. I didn't even know how to really use it. I had the applicator in there and everything. My friend at school had to show me how to do it right. I went through the school day, I got home from school, and then I took the tampon out. I was itching and scratching all over. I felt so sick. I was telling my mom, and my mom was like, She just faking. She not sick. She just faking. And my grandma was like, she got a fever though. She got a fever. And my mom was like, she all right. She gonna be fine. Just take this Herbalife. That's what you need to do. Just take this Herbalife. To this day, I hate Herbalife because of this incident. She was making me swallow these pills, but as soon as I swallowed them, I threw them up. Anything I drank, water, juice, whatever, I threw it up. My mama was like, oh, she acting. Stop acting like you sick. Stop acting like you got a problem. You just acting. Then she whipped me. The whipping hurt, but it also felt so good because my body was so itchy. Every time the belt hit me, it was like a good scratch. Then when my grandma came over, I was completely dehydrated. I had scratched holes in my legs and my feet. You know when you run outside with no shoes on after the ice cream truck in the summertime and the bottom of your feet burn? That's how it felt all over my whole body. I was so dehydrated from vomiting constantly, my tongue had swollen up. My grandma was not having this. She needs to go to the hospital. I'm taking her to the hospital. And my mom was like, don't take her to the hospital. She don't need to go to the hospital. She faking. This is why you gonna end up losing these kids, my grandma said. My grandma ignored her and took me to the hospital. Later on, they told me if she hadn't have brought me in when she did, I would have died that night from dehydration alone. I had toxic shock. That was my first time getting a pap smear. I was 13. They had to break my hymen and all that shit. Two people stuck their fingers in my butt. It was the worst. But there was this sexy doctor that came in. I'll never forget that doctor. He was black and really strong, and he was scary handsome. He was pressing on my stomach and stuff. The doctor was like, does that hurt? I would try to be all sexy and cute and say it seductively. Oh, yes. It hurts. Ooh. It really did hurt, but I was trying to be cute about it. He left the room, but I wanted him to come back. I wanted him to come back because I thought he was so handsome. I need the doctor. That nurse was like, what's the matter? It's hurting. It's hurting so much in my lower stomach area. It hurts. It's hurting. You sure? Here, I can give you some pain medicine. No, I think the doctor needs to come back in here. He's still on the floor. We'll get him to come back. I fixed my hair and spread it out on the pillow, made it look seductive. I was 13. I was so stupid. I was trying to make it look sexy. When he came back, I threw the sheet to the side and I opened my legs and said, I think I need another thing where y'all check with the thing because it hurts a lot. I think you need to look at it. He threw the sheet back over me.
Miss Tiffany, that's very cute, but you do not need to be looked at down there anymore. You're going to be just fine. I just looked over all your lab reports and everything is getting back to normal very quickly. You'll be out of here by tomorrow, okay? Nobody needs to look at your private parts anymore.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm quite sure.
Oh my God, I was a thirsty kid. Controlling jealous boyfriends. Every boyfriend I get is jealous. Every man that I date is jealous of other people around me or jealous of me. I don't know what it is about me. I gotta figure that out. I can't tell you how many guys I've dated who are all about no phone calls from dudes. Who is this dude? What's his name? What kind of business is it? Are you cheating on me? Are you cheating on me? Blah, 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 blah. So many of these guys fussing at me every single day about dudes. Do they not realize I'm in a male-dominated business and I'm going to have to talk to men every day? That's just a part of my gig. I try to explain this. Then I hear, well, you shouldn't be flirting. You shouldn't be sending emojis. When I did this television special one time, I got 200 to 300 text messages from all these different comedians. The guy I was dating went through my phone and deleted a bunch of them. I let him do it because I have nothing to hide. I don't know why guys do that, but they always look at my phone. Every guy that I've dated has gone through my phone. But I can't even get mad at the dudes who are jealous and possessive. You know why? I picked them. I picked every dude. I literally walked up to them, grabbed their arm like, "You are beefy. What's your name? You sexy." That didn't work in high school. In high school, dudes were like, "What? What is wrong with you? Hey, man, you talk to Tiffany? What's wrong with Tiffany?" It works now. Now guys respond. Well, at least the guys I tend to be attracted to, possessive and jealous and controlling, they respond. The good guys, they don't as much. They get scared. One of my comedy buddies tried to help me. "Tiffany, you need to just smile and don't say shit. Look at the dude, smile, and then look away. If they like you, they're gonna come for you. You're a beautiful girl. You should never say, 'Damn, you look beefy,' or 'You're handsome.' You don't need to do that." For most guys, I think he is right. For most guys, if a woman approaches them, they don't know how to process it. If you're a woman and you compliment a guy, even something simple like, "Oh, nice shoes," and you don't work with them every day, you're not seeing them every day, it's just some guy you met and you compliment them, they think something's wrong with your pussy. They think, even subconsciously, that your pussy must be broken. That's why so many guys tell me, "You be acting thirsty." My comedy buddy, he was telling me like, "You act like you an ugly girl. Like you an ugly girl on the inside, but a pretty girl on the outside. Did you know that?" It's like fat people who lose weight. In their head, they're still that fat person they used to be. The other day, I was thinking about why I'm like this. I think I act like this and I end up picking jealous and possessive guys because in some sick, twisted way, I think that means they care. I'm like, "Look at all the energy he's putting into finding out what I'm doing." The reality is, in my life, no man's ever really cared. As a kid, I didn't have any man that cared about me. My dad didn't care, stepdad didn't care, uncles didn't care, nobody cared. I think that I interpreted possessiveness for men as love. Also, my grandma said to me as a child, "Every man is going to think of you as his property. That's why they want to put their last name on your name. Then you're their property. So you want to make sure whoever you end up with knows how to maintain that property. See yourself as a house. You have to view yourself as the house on the highest part of the hill. You can't let everybody come into your house. They can't catch no bus to your house. They can't ride no bike to your house. They got to have a nice car with four-wheel drive to get up to your house." Ain't that some fucked up shit to say to a little girl? Especially a poor girl who was in and out of foster care? The reality is, for all my 20s, I thought of myself as an apartment in the projects, right in the front of the bus stop. Who wants some? Who wants to come in the apartment? Hey, let's have a party. Who wants to be in here? I just wanted anyone in. I would let anyone in who wanted to guard this property, to protect me. If you understand that about me, you understand why I was with the wrong men so long. I know I've got to stop it, though. I'm single now. I'm just going to kick back and see what comes to me. I'm not going to keep repeating these patterns with men. They are not working. The ex-husband. I just got to warn you straight up. This story is bad. And not bad in a funny way, like the Roscoe story or the Titus story. Like, this is just flat out bad. This story is probably going to frustrate you. It might even get you angry. I almost did not put this in a book. I mean, there isn't much here that's funny, to be honest. but I ended up putting it in because of three reasons. One, it's the hard truth about my life. I will always tell the truth, even when it's not fun. Two, I hope some young girl can learn from my mistakes and avoid what I went through. Three, I believe everything happens for a reason. And as bad as this was, I believe it made me better and helped me get to where I am. With that in mind, let me tell you about my experience with marriage, domestic violence, and self-delusion. It all started when I went on that cruise with Titus. The one where he brought $50 for the whole cruise. That one. On the plane, I met this guy who was a cop. Ain't even gonna say his real name. It don't matter. I'll just call him ex-husband. Me and ex-husband talked for a while, and he seemed nice. It turned out he was going to the same cruise I was, and he wanted to take a cab with me there. But I had Titus, and I wasn't all into this guy. But he was a policeman, and I thought, this would be a good friend to have. It's always good to have a police friend, especially black police, because there ain't a lot of them. You already read all the nonsense that went on with Titus. Well, I left some details out of the story, because I knew I was going to tell them here. Part of the reason why Titus was so upset was because of ex-husband. This dude was straight following me around the cruise the whole time. Like, everywhere I was at, he was there. And he always had a video camera filming everything. Like, I was singing karaoke. He was filming that. I would be like in a shuffleboard contest. He was filming that. Ping pong. He was filming that. We were swimming in the pool, me and my boyfriend, like hugging on each other. He's filming that. Titus got in an argument with me, started yelling and cursing at me because this man was following me around with the camera. Titus was like,
are you fucking this guy? Why is this guy following you everywhere with the goddamn camera? Who the fuck is this?
I think ex-husband even got that on camera. He filmed the argument. Now, obviously, he wasn't standing there filming us like a camera crew would do. That would have been really weird. I wasn't even positive he was filming us. He was sneaky about it. He was always around with this boy and their camera. But I thought maybe he was just filming his vacation. This was back when people did that shit. Everybody was walking around with cameras. Everybody was filming everything. In 2001, that shit was normal. It all came to a head when I was in the cruise talent show. I was singing James Brown's Sex Machine, and man, I was into it. I was kind of drunk, so I was getting sexy, yelling into the mic, hey, all of that. The crowd loved it. Titus was in the crowd, and I guess he was getting all anxious about me being sexy. So he runs up to me and throws a jacket around my shoulders like James Brown. Then the ex-husband runs up and throws his boxers and key to his cabin on the stage. I'm serious. The dude took his boxers off somehow and then threw them on stage. Well, that changed the whole dynamic. Titus was hella mad, but he wasn't even man enough to yell at ex-husband. He just yelled at me.
You fucking him?
I didn't even ask that man to do any of that. He just did it himself.
You fucking him, ain't you? Where you fucking him at?
Why don't you go ask him? Now, mind you, Titus came on the boat with $50, so he's highly intimidated. Basically, he's intimidated by ex-husband because the dude has a job and, like, money from that job. Then, everywhere we went, ex-husband was always trying to do stuff for me, trying to buy me a drink in the casino, trying to buy me stuff at the port. And what's crazy is you can't buy drinks in the casino because they're free. Huh. Should have known then. The ex-husband came up to me at the end of the cruise with Titus standing right there.
Maybe we can exchange numbers or something. I live in Georgia, but you know, I'll call you.
Then Titus be over here talking shit to me. He pulled me aside, yelling at me. And I'm like, why you bitching at me? You don't even say, hey man, that's my girl, or whatever. And you want to cuss me out, like yelling at me?
No, you talk to this motherfucker. I've been avoiding him, you tell him. That's your job.
Fuck you, you acting like a bitch. I pulled away and gave dude my number. Titus was pissed off, but you know what? I was pretty much done with him. Besides, he lived in Georgia. I wasn't never going to see this dude anyway. I gave him my number mainly because Titus was being such a pussy. We ended up talking on the phone maybe once a month or so. One day I was just like, man, you're old. He was like 32. I was like, you're too old for me. And I hung up. I ended up changing my number and moved and all this stuff. And I didn't even think about him enough to update him. So then he couldn't find me and I forgot about him mostly. 5 years later, he calls me up out of nowhere. I remembered who he was immediately. We talked for a second, but I was curious how he found me.
Tiffany, I've been looking for you for 5 years. I'm so excited to talk to you again.
Well, if you wanted to talk to me, why didn't you look me up sooner?
I couldn't spell your last name. Then I saw you on Bill Bellamy's Who's Got Jokes, and I saw I was spelling your name wrong.
Yeah, but my number ain't listed.
Yeah, I know. I got your phone number from a dude I know who works at Sprint. I'm a police, that's easy.
After he told me everything he did to find me, I asked, if you could find me, maybe you could find my dad.
Oh, I'll find your daddy for you, but it's gonna cost you.
I'll pay you whatever you want. Whatever you want, I'll pay you. In my mind, I'm thinking I'll give him a couple $100, maybe a couple of dates or something. That's it. Then he's like,
well, I want you to marry me.
I just started busting up laughing, but he was serious.
Tiffany, I'm telling you, I want you to marry me. I've been watching this video I found, you know, when we was on the boat. Every time I'm sad, I watch you. You make me happy. I don't even really know you, but you've made me happy over the years. When I've had arguments with my girlfriends, I put in our little cruise video, and it just, you know, it makes me happy. I know we weren't on a cruise together, but you were my whole cruise.
I thought it was so cute, but I still wanted to see if he was serious. Well, I don't know. If you find my dad, then maybe we could talk about that.
Oh, I'm going to find your dad.
I know what you're saying right now because it's what everyone says at this point in the story.
That didn't creep you out.
No, motherfucker, it did not. Now, you're probably asking, why not? That's how you know I'm crazy. Because I literally thought that this call was a sign from God. I thought God had answered my prayers. Just 2 months before, I was praying to God every day. Please send me a man that loved me, that care about me, that want to see me flourish, that want to just be there for me, support me, and do what I want to do. Like, just really want me to be happy. Please send me somebody like that, God. Then, boom, I get this phone call. I was like, damn, God, you work fast. And he gonna find my dad? You're awesome, God. I'm in. I didn't tell him much about my dad because I don't know much. I just knew my dad's name, his birthday, and where he came from. 3 weeks went by, and my dad called me. For like 10 years, I've been trying to reach him. I've been looking for him since I was 16. I didn't think he would find him. And this dude straight found my daddy in 3 weeks. I was crying because I recognized the voice immediately. He started telling me stuff about my family that only my family would know. After the call, my mind went racing. God or not, I thought to myself, damn, I'm not really going to honor this. I can't marry this dude. I don't even remember what he looks like. He had a MySpace page, and his picture on his MySpace page was so damn little, you couldn't see what this motherfucker looked like. I called him up, still crying after talking to my dad.
Man, I'm so grateful. You found him. I don't even know if I can honor our agreement. I don't even remember what you really look like. The pictures you got online is whack.
We're going to see each other. We're going to see each other.
I didn't believe him. He was across the country from me. We still kept talking on the phone. I booked a movie in New Orleans like the next day. And 2 weeks after that, I was in New Orleans. I always talked to him on the phone, but I never told him where I was in New Orleans. I never told him what hotel, the name of the movie, or anything. At this point in time, I was very superstitious. It was mainly because of Kevin Hart. He gave me this advice as I started to get going. Don't tell people everything that you're doing because motherfuckers will try to make you fail. Just do your shit. You ain't gotta tell everybody you got a movie. Just do the fucking movie, Tiffany. Like, don't tell people where you're at because they're gonna come for you. Oh, they're coming for you. Yeah, they're gonna come for you. Because people will be trying to do bad stuff. They think bad thoughts. And they're jealous. And they will try to fuck you up. So I never told them what the name of the movie was, what kind of part I was playing, nothing. I just said, I'm working. That's it. I'm working. I'm in New Orleans working. One night, I was out drinking at the Cat's Meow, all tipsy, and he called my phone. When are you coming to see me? I'll come and see you right now. Yeah, right. You ain't coming to see me. We got off the phone, and I went back to drinking and didn't think nothing of it. I woke up at 5 in the morning to start getting ready for the movie. I was hungover and getting ready to go to set. I was braiding my hair in these little crackhead braids so I could play this drug addict in the movie. I got a knock on my door. I thought, I didn't order no food. I opened the door, and there was a chubby, plain-looking guy in a polo shirt, just staring at me like he was expecting me to say something.
Who are you?
It's me.
It's ex-husband.
How do you know what room I'm in? How did you know to come here?
I just looked you up. It's not hard. I called the front desk. They said what room you're in. Here I am.
That motherfucker drove 7 hours. He drove all the way from Atlanta for me. And all I'm thinking to myself is, this motherfucker is ugly. He's fat. He is not hot. And he is very not attractive. Later, he said the same thing to me. He said,
when I first saw you at the door, I was thinking, this bitch got skinny. She looks like she on drugs. She wore the fuck out. I'm not feeling this at all.
Yeah, I was trying to dress like a crackhead for the movie. He wasn't trying to be fat and ugly. He just was. Well, you can stay in the living room part. You can sleep on the couch. It folds out if you want to go to sleep. I'm about to go to work. I went to work and came back to the room. He cleaned up the room, bought flowers and stuff. He took me out to a really nice restaurant. The next day, he took me shopping. He didn't try to fuck me. He didn't try to kiss me or nothing. So I started thinking he was gay. Because why are you buying me stuff and taking me to nice restaurants and not trying to fuck me? Then he went back to Georgia. The next weekend, I drunk dialed him. And he showed right back up the next day. And he took me out again. That's when Harry Potter was hot. So I got him to buy me the whole Harry Potter series. I got him to buy me some stuff from Victoria's Secrets. I was like, if he's gay, he could just buy me everything. Fuck it. I don't mind hanging out with gay dudes. I just really thought he was gay. Then the following weekend, it was his birthday. He was like, I'm going to fly you to Atlanta so you can see my house. I don't need to see your house. I'm not going to care about your house.
No, I'm going to fly you Sunday. It's my birthday.
He flew me to Atlanta, and that was the first time a man flew me somewhere. So I was feeling super special, even if he was gay. At this point, I've been talking to him seriously for a few weeks. And he'd been buying me stuff and being so nice and flying me places, and he even found my daddy. Yeah, he wasn't all that hot, but damn, no man had ever been this good to me. After he picked me up from the airport, we pulled up to his house. In my little pea brain, I thought this was the most beautiful house in the whole wide fucking world. I was telling myself, I don't care if he is gay. I am fucking the shit out of him. He is going to get the business, okay? I don't care if he's gay and ugly and fat. I am going to fuck him. So I did fuck him, and he wasn't gay. It was like my soul left my body, and it was like, this is your husband, girl. You need to lock this in. He knows what he's doing. He was all cool. Then when we were done, I was like, so, where my ring at? Ain't you supposed to be giving me a ring or something?
What? You really want to get married? We can do that. We can do that shit today.
Yeah, I want to get married. I want my ring. It better be pretty and stuff, too. That day, he drove me up to Virginia to meet my dad. I met my dad in person, and he filmed all that. After I met my dad, we drove back down to Atlanta. Don't get me wrong, there were signs of craziness during all of this, but I didn't think much of it. I know what you're